I denne episoden av 30 minutter inn I fremtiden så skal vi få treffe Celeste Kid. Celeste traff jeg på en konferanse om kunstig intelligens I Amsterdam. Celeste professor ved Berkeley Universitetet I USA og hun studerer Human Belief Formation and Ethical Tech. Dette spennende greier, og hun spesielt opptatt av hvordan kunstig intelligens akkurat nå påvirker barn, hva vi lærer og hvordan vi lærer, og at vi kanskje litt latere enn det vi liker å tro at vi
Hi, Celeste, and welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you with me. Yeah, how are you?
I'm super good. I'm excited about talking about future things.
Yeah, that's cool, Reason. Yeah, cool. But first of all, I know that you're deeply into understanding how AI and kids go together. And can you tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my lab is the Kid Lab at UC Berkeley. We're in the Department of Psychology. And the main question we work on is how humans and other biologically intelligent agents form their beliefs. What we've learned in the 10 plus years of doing science on this topic is that it doesn't work exactly in the intuitive way you might expect it to. I was a reporter before I was a scientist, and I thought this was a high calling because the way in which you create an informed populace that then enables democracy, that enables collaboration and innovation is you give everybody good information. You give everybody as much good information as possible. Then I tried working as a reporter and it doesn't always go that way. This is like the idea of a young person. Anybody who's like tried to change hearts and minds using data knows that it doesn't work this way. And the question is like, why? Why doesn't it work this way? Why do people sometimes have the wrong idea but seem to ignore good data? And in a nutshell, what we have worked on in this, the work we've done since the lab's inception has shown that it's not about how much information or the quality of the information. It's really about there being an interaction between somebody's current knowledge state and what's put in front of them. Most of the time about most things, people are not open to changing their minds. We have limited bandwidth, we have limited time. So people are looking around the world trying to decide what of the too much stuff they're going to attend to right now. And everybody is making different choices with respect to what they already understand. People starting as early as we can test them, starting in infancy, are looking to attend to something that allows them to resolve some intermediate amount of uncertainty. They're looking for something that they are uncertain about, and they will watch that for a little while until they reach some threshold level of certainty, and then they lose interest and they move on to something else. The implication of this is that as a species, humans are really unusual in that we hyper-specialize. We have people that specialize in particular eras in history, in particular types of dress, as like one component of a car. As individuals, when we know something, we tend to want more information that's related to what we currently know. Individually, this means we don't know how the world works. We're not open to learning most things about the world if it's not sufficiently connected to our current knowledge. But as a population, as a group of people, so long as we can collaborate with each other and share knowledge, like we are able to have a fantastic breadth in terms of what we know. The way our system has adapted over time, now we have new technologies that are coming into play more and more often that are being built into the back ends of other types of systems that we don't even notice or think about this happening, that are curating the information for people without respect to the way in which people work. A lot of developers that I talk to just don't understand that people don't change their minds with respect to every piece of information you put in front of them, most things that you put in front of most people most of the time is not going to get encoded, is not going to change their minds. So if you have introduced a technology to people, like some of the generative AI systems that contain some kind of biases that provide information to people, even systems, when I talk about this, people immediately think of large-scale language models and systems that people are going to ask questions in moments of uncertainty. That's a vulnerable moment because you don't know the answer. You're uncertain. That's the moment where you're open to changing your mind. If you get a little nugget that appears to answer your question, your curiosity drops, you are no longer open to considering subsequent information, and you can get stuck with the wrong idea that way. But this also applies to other systems like text-to-image systems. When you are generating images, I think a lot of people, all people, have the impression that they're trying to create something that's already in their minds. But when you probe that, that's probably not what's going on. These models are filling in a lot of the details in ways that not just perpetuate, but in many cases amplify biases. That's data that you're seeing in a moment. And I was like, that's also going to influence the beliefs that people have. It's not just LLMs. It's anything that is serving information to people. Is also influencing their beliefs, and subsequently, yes.
So what you're saying is that it's kind of intuitive for us or natural for us to always try to find confirmation of what we already believe in.
It's not exactly confirmation. So that's like that. That is another. There's a whole slew of research on confirmation biases. This is something different. This is. That people organize their search for information in a way that favors things about which they have a little bit of uncertainty, and they pay attention and are looking out for things that will resolve that uncertainty. And once it is resolved, you move on and you're done. It's hard to get somebody to go back. So I get asked all the time, I was like, they know somebody that has a belief that's not right. And they say, like, I've been talking to them. I've been telling them. I've been sending them articles, and we've done versions of the like sending people articles for a misinformed belief in the lab. It doesn't work, even when we like pay them to pay attention to the information. And the reason it doesn't work is because we have this very efficient, smart system in place that disfavors. If you think you know what the right answer is,
yeah.
You need, like, that's good enough. You move on and you start learning about something else. Once that's been triggered, you can't get somebody back. So even when you present more information on the topic, even when we pay them pay attention to that, they're thinking about something else. Everybody's had the experience of being in a situation where information is being presented that is overly simple, or they already know it. I can't pay attention to a lesson in a kindergarten class. And it's not an issue of motivation. It's that I understand the material already. That's how we work. It's a little bit imperfect in that there's no distinction between whether or not I actually know this material and whether I think I know the material. If I see something and I think that I am certain about this, I cannot force myself to pay attention to it and change my mind. So you can't change people's minds as easily as people think that you can. That's the crux of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. But then you kind of took this into kids and artificial intelligence.
Right. Yeah. So kids are at higher risk of having their beliefs distorted from getting these small nuggets of confidently conveyed information, especially if the systems that they're getting these through are presented as intelligent. If you say this is a smart machine, it can help you answer questions. Then you're setting a child up for adopting the beliefs, the information that it receives from the system with higher certainty. Kids are also more vulnerable because they're in like relatively nascent knowledge states. They're less able to detect when they get information that's not right because they know less about the world. But also you're starting them down a path that's not right early on. If you go like wrong in the maze at the beginning, it's going to take you, if you like keep going after that, it takes you a longer time to recover and get back on the right track. The same thing is true with kids. So kids are much more vulnerable to the types of belief distortions that I worry about when people in with technologies that have been developed without the sensitivities.
Yeah. So, but when you looked into this, I remember you told me one, you know, fun story about how kids actually use generative AI. I would think it was about the speech when you could start talking to ChatGPT-4 and the stories the kids. Yeah.
The stories the kids,
you know, what they are really, how did they use it?
Right. That's a very interesting topic. So here's what we know, and then I'll also talk about what we don't know. I was like, what we know from a very recent poll that was done by Common Sense Media is that by age 12 in the US, most kids have used ChatGPT. What we also know is that their caretakers and the adults looking after them grossly underestimate whether or not they have used ChatGPT. Adults are not aware that kids are using this. Also important in that survey data is that if a child has used ChatGPT for a school assignment, it's now replacing basic search. They're not going to Google and searching for information now. And why that is a concern, given what I've said about how human beliefs are formed, is that if you get distortions, I was like, if you get, sometimes they're called hallucinations. I don't love that term, but I'll call them that. If you get negative stereotype biases in the model outputs, if those things happen, and we know that those things happen, it's impacting children more often. And if they're using these systems not for kind of playing around, if they're using these systems with high confidence that this is a smart system that's giving them a concatenation of the world's knowledge, I've heard people describe these systems as something like that, then this is a big problem, that they're going to these systems with questions about which they have high uncertainty. They're going there in the moment when they're most open to changing their minds. And if they receive responses that appear to answer their question, all those things that I described happening, their curiosity depletes, they're no longer interested in seeking further information. And if they happen to just by chance encounter other contradictory information in the future, they will regard it not exactly for confirmation bias reasons, but just because it's they're thinking about something else. So it's like they've moved on and they have different questions. So these systems pose a real risk to giving people, especially little people, the wrong idea in ways that may be longer lasting than we want. Add on top of that, if they're all using the system, they're all getting information from the same place. Once you've transmitted a misinformed belief, once you've transmitted a fabrication from an AI system to a person, especially if you've transmitted it to a bunch of people, it will pass among people in perpetuity. I was like, it makes it more difficult to figure out how to correct that misinformed belief. So I was like, these systems are problematic and worrisome from that perspective too.
Yeah, yeah. But so what do you think we should now watch out for in the year to come? You know, now these things are being there really mainstream and integrated in a bunch of different systems that people are already using, and kids also. What should we watch out for?
There's a rush right now to figure out how to deal with things like ChatGPT in schools. What do we do with it? If kids are using it, we should talk about it. I was like, what should that curriculum look like? And right now, curriculums have been developed about how to talk to kids about AI that are largely not informed by data, because the data doesn't exist. We do not have a data set of what exactly kids are doing with it. We know in our lab from just piloting and also the anecdotes that appear in like the news, kids are doing a lot of things with it. They are doing things like using it in order to answer questions that they maybe don't want to ask an adult. I was like, that's a thing that they might use it for. That's obviously, I was like, that particular kind of use has like extra problems, because then if somebody else doesn't find out about it and they've gotten bad information, that's going to be harder to correct that. They also are interested in it as a system. So they also play with it and try to break it and see what is possible. And kids are good at exploring stuff and trying to sort stuff out. We don't know what that looks like either. We don't know how kids are using these systems. Like, to date, I haven't seen any data where we ask, like, how are you? Are you using your parents' account? Kids are not allowed to have OpenAI accounts if they're under the age of 13. But we know from the Common Sense Media data that they're using it. We know from a tiny bit of piloting that sometimes they're using it in a, like, all of them are using them in a school computer that's logged in. Sometimes they're using their parents' account. Sometimes they are making their own Gmail account to then create. It's like, they just say that they're not a child, and that's like, that also works. So how they're using it also probably makes a difference in terms of what they're seeing. And yeah, it's like what the risks are. But right now we're flying blind. It's like we're trying to figure out how to educate kids about the dangers and the potential utility without understanding what they're doing with it. And we can't possibly, that's not the right order in which we should do things. That second thing you mentioned about it being built into everything, I don't think that's even on educators' radars, but this is another thing, topic that we don't have good data on now. It's really important for people to efficiently integrate information that they understand. What is the process that generated this data? I was like, how reliable is this data? The systems themselves, LLMs, infamously do not, without some sort of external post hoc correction, provide information about whether or not what the response is reliable. The system doesn't know that. LLMs, the current generation, does not have any kind of underlying representation of its own uncertainty. Even if you wanted to have it do that, you'd have to do something. You have to build something very, very different. People thinking that they're doing something that's like Googling, and then it's not like Googling. It's like they're actually accessing an LLM back tech that is more likely to give fabricated information. People knowing what they're interacting with is really important. Also related is like people have proposed laws that would require businesses to inform people whether or not they are interacting with a biological person or they're interacting with an AI. That's important for the same reasons. Biological agents cannot help but to communicate their uncertainty even when they don't want to. So for example, you ask somebody for directions, maybe both people want to provide the directions and one person knows exactly where you should go and the other person does not. There are latency differences in those two responses. There'll generally be more disfluencies in the person that is not quite sure. People are communicating not consciously, but constantly the degree to which they are certain or uncertain. And that's very important from the perspective of someone forming new beliefs on the basis of that information. I was like, I will trust less directions that are given to me when the person takes a minute and then says, and uses phrases like, I think, or changes their mind. And I need to be able to tell the difference between that kind of direction and somebody that says, like, this is where you go. LLMs don't do that. If you think you're interacting with a person and you get a confident response, you're going to follow those directions when you shouldn't. So that's also an important topic for the future.
But do you think that, it just strikes me when you're talking, do we think too much or too little about the effects on kids and right now just try to handle this in the adult world? Because, I mean, there are new regulations, at least in Europe, coming out now. And amongst other things, as a company, you have to, as you said, you have to say if you're using an AI. That doesn't really, you know, matter to a kid 8 years old. They will still kind of believe in it, wouldn't it?
That as a more open questions, we don't know. They're way more likely to believe in it. If again, the it's presented in school as something that's smart and that can answer their questions. Yeah. We need to do a survey of how we're talking about it. Yeah. I think to really wrap our heads around that question. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, but now we're just, you know, so we need to be, you know, we need to kind of, as always, maybe, be responsible for our kids and how they use technology. And the challenge right. here is also, I think, that it's hard for us adults to keep track on everything's going on right now. But if right. we were to kind of look a little bit further down the road, this, you know, journey of AI has just started. Right. At least the way we know it right now. Where do you right. think we're headed with this in both a positive and a, you know, ways that we need to be aware of?
Yeah. So where I'm worried that we're headed, there's been a lot of intentional control of the narrative around AI for the purposes of promoting commercial interests. This is not a totally novel thing that I am saying. It's not popular knowledge, though. Like there have been surveys. You referenced one of them about what people believe AI can do, and generally, people overestimate how far along the technology is, what it's capable of, the degree to which it's neutral, even when they know that it has biases and it creates fabrications. They're under the impression that we have at least some kind of approach for correcting those biases down the road. We don't. So I worry about people making up their minds about where the state of the technology is on the basis of, I don't want to call them insincere, but I will call them biased, as a financial interest driven portrayals of what the technology is. There's a lot of confusion about how things work, and it's really important that be corrected as often and as soon as possible. I would like to see more efforts of teachers having the resources to, that they want to know what this technology is like, because they want to communicate this information to kids across the world. I do the same thing from teachers, and we don't have resources for them. There's been a lot of confusion about a lot of technologies. We had talked previously about self-driving cars and people not knowing generally that self-driving car technology is not as far along as you might think it is. If you see a car without a driver in it driving in San Francisco, you see that and you don't understand that in a lot of cases there's human intervention to make the decisions, and that's what makes it possible for those cars to, they still block traffic quite a lot, but the for them to go more often than they would otherwise without human assistance. The human contribution to how AI appears to be smart is grossly underestimated by most people in the population. And it's really crucial that we correct that, especially for educators, because they are disseminating this information to other little minds. That's an urgent issue that I see becoming more and more of a problem. As we move past this initial phase where people were excited and they are like, oh, isn't this amazing? Like, a lot of things are not as amazing as you think that they are. And it's important that people know that for moderating the degree to which they trust these technologies and how much they care about, like, what the regulation should be. What should we prioritize in terms of what we regulate and what we don't worry about immediately?
But don't you think that people will... And I'm asking, kind of figure this out. There was a sentence in Norway, I think it was three or four students at the university level. So no, not kids, but university level. They were caught cheating or suspected of cheating using ChatGPT to answer their their assignments. And two of them, I think it was, I might remember but wrong, but at least a few of them were, you know, they were freed because it turned out that they had used ChatGPT to just make the language based on what they had actually written themselves better, which right. then ended up being okay. And they had also said in their assignment that I've been using ChatGPT to help me, you know, make right. a more professional language. Right. But the two others, or a few others, they had used ChatGPT to answer the questions. And then when you read through it, it was, you know, big mistakes. It referred to literature that didn't exist, you know, as you said, because it's not an oracle. It's not a search engine. It's not a, you know, it's just a language model. So you could argue that, you know, a few of the students, they used it the right way based on what I've been writing myself. The others used it the wrong way. Don't you think we will figure that out? You know, as you said, it's not as spectacular as it might seem. It's good at languages. Or are we, is that what you started by saying? But as, oh no, I don't know. It looks good to me.
Yeah, I don't think we should rely on, I don't think people I don't think they can figure it out without there being another set of regulations that I hear less talk about, which is the regulations on the claims around what AI technologies are and aren't, what they can do and what they can't do. There's no way for people to sort that out. The first version, it was like GPT-3, when it came out, that era, people used it, and a lot of the talk was like, look at how silly this output is. Like, look at the errors that it makes. And then GPT-4 was this incredible, a lot of claims were made about what it was capable of. I was like, there was talks about sparks of AGI, and I read some ridiculous things that were not written by developmental psychologists claiming that like it was childlike and human-like. Yeah. In some ways, the people that wrote those things used tasks that were used with children in ways that were not appropriate and interpreted the results in ways that were not. I was like, I know of no paper that says, I know of no evidence of emergent capabilities in the way that people think that term, what they think that the term means. There are financial interests in creating a narrative around this technology being too intelligent, too smart. And that's not going away. There's so much of it coming at people so rapidly. It's getting integrated in so many places all of a sudden. It's not possible for individual people to sort that out. This is a great case study in like, we need to make sure that we preserve access of people to experts that can help decode and demystify the claims around this technology, and that I haven't seen as much of that as we need right now. The phase where developers were traveling around and meeting with world leaders, and the world leaders were posting pictures of meetings with developers and feeling proud that they had been educated about the technology without acknowledging the financial interest of the individuals they're talking to. You need to be in touch with the developers, obviously, but you also need independent sources to be checks on these claims. And we don't let people make dangerous claims about what drugs can and can't do. That's something that's regulated in most places in the world. We need to treat human beliefs with a similar kind of care as we do human bodies. Claims on what you can, so checks on what you can claim and what you can't.
So I mean, 30 minutes is a short time. We're almost out of time already. It's a huge but I think that was a kind of nice ending of it, because this is just technology, and humans, we have our obvious kind of obstacles, as you started with, and we need to, but that's maybe one of the challenges, that we need to kind of educate ourselves even more, understand what this really is. The capabilities are wonderful used the right way, but they can also be a big challenge. And basically, because people, you know, are satisfied, I'll move on.
And I think a big insight that is important, but underknown. That's not a word. I was like, I like the more innovations that biological agents can do. I was like, that's not a word, but I can use it, and you know mostly what I mean. We need to preserve the ability of people to defer to true experts. We need to preserve people's ability to get good information from a few independent sources that like know what's up. And I think thinking about it in terms of that, instead of saying like, it's like the idea that we're going to educate everybody on everything, you just can't do that. I was like, I want to hear about it. That's not how people work. And that's not even our strength as a species. Like, what's wonderful about people is that we don't know as individuals everything. We super specialize. We don't all need to be experts in AI. We just need to preserve reputable channels for assessing and checking and giving some information to people that's not super deep, so that their ability to use this technology is productive instead of destructive.
Let that be the final word. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. This was super fun.